Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. His dad eats lip balm. Please welcome Richard Herring. Episode 2 of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapach, which that stands for Richard Herring loves self-filating tumescent penises. That's why. Penises is only self-filating. I'm not diphylactic. I wish. But it means having two penises, so that's... You could work that out yourself. So we've had some fun last week with Tim Minchin, and we've got another fantastic couple of guests this week. I think we're going to break this into two different podcasts. The people here at the Leicester Square Theatre who've bothered to pay to come down, despite this going out for free online tomorrow. Idiots. There's a good reason to come. You get a chance to win some prizes in the competition at the end, and today's prizes will be a copy of Lee and Herring's Fist of Fun Series 1 on DVD. Taken 17 years for this to come out. 1995 or 1996 it was, and the BBC refused to bring this out on DVD themselves. They said that it was too funny, and they wanted to give their other DVDs a chance. Would just show them up. So we had to get ourselves. Me and Stu brought this ourselves from the BBC. Cost us £45,000. So it'd be nice if people bought that. It's you can go to www.gofasterstripe.com and you can buy that if you're at home, if you want to. But someone's going to win it tonight. Someone's going to also win a very clever puzzle compendium. I've got a whole bag of these. So yeah, kind of nerdy. Elliot Lyne gave them to me with no information about how people at home can get them. I'm published. He's from Mensa. So if you're really... if you're reading this on the tube, you know, chicks all think you're cool, lads. Because that's what girls love. Right, girls? Less girls in this week for some reason than there were
I thought it's because I'd got married, all the chicks were turning up, thinking he's irresistible now. He's unobtainable. I'm very obtainable. Don't worry, I'm still obtainable. Just don't tell my wife. Luckily, she doesn't listen to this. You know, I also brought a Rich Herring Someone Like Sugar as well, DVD. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's an old show. That's available to download. You can download that from Go Faster Stripe now. And two, very excitingly, two tickets to see this podcast when Stuart Lee is the guest, which is sold out. So if you'd come down, people at home, you could have had a chance. And they're in seats E15 and E16. So if you come down to that show, you can meet the person. Just go to those seats. And that's quite good. They're quite near the front because that is sold out, but there might be some returns. So we've got some brilliant guests coming up. But let's have a look and see what's been going on this week. I haven't prepared myself. I should really spend more time working out what I'm going to say. It's been a big weekend for football, of course. That's the main news, and all the football fans out there very excited because, of course, York City won the FA Trophy. That was the big news. All the football fans are talking about it. I was there. I saw it. They beat Newport County, which is a football team, in the FA Trophy. You've probably heard of them and all there. They'd actually, this is the first time Newport County. They came 17th, I think, in the Premiership, the Conference Premiership. They avoided relegation by about 6 points, and York City took them down 2-0. That's how good we are. They had a 95-year-old fan who'd come to Wembley, who supported Newport County for 90 years. This is the first time they'd come to Wembley, and I was glad we defeated them. I was trying to find him afterwards to laugh at his stupid old face. Make him till he cried. John Travolta's been in trouble with masseuses. Male masseuses. What a surprise. He always seems such a hit with the ladies. But he's been... allegedly, he's been kind of massaging back a little bit. Which I think's fair enough, isn't it? I mean, I'm always a bit confused with massages. I've got sympathy with John Travolta here because, like, some of them were saying he was clearly getting aroused and moving, and masseuse can tell that when someone is excited in an inappropriate way. But I get like that every time I'm... Don't you? On that spot? Isn't that part? There's a grey area, isn't there, between... It's sort of like you're allowed to do it, but there's, you know, it's a sort of slightly... I mean, I don't grab hold of the guy. If it's a guy, I don't have a... And if it's a woman, I don't know. What are you implying? Grab them, but I did have an experience once where the other way around, where I went to a kind of spa for the weekend. Yeah, I know, and not the supermarket. It was like, and it was kind of a bit new worldy, Ponzi, I did this hot and cold. My girlfriend at the time insisted that I had a hot and cold stone massage, and it was a middle-aged man doing it. That's fine, but he made me not. He made me take all my clothes off. And he didn't give me his little pants to put on. And he touched my cock twice. Once I can forgive, but twice is too much. But I find that confusing. I don't know about you. Do you find that confusing? So have you been for a massage?
I have, yeah.
Yeah? Have you ever, you're kind of hoping, aren't you? There's a part, if it's a, you know, whatever persuasion you are of, if it's an attractive young lady or man, you know, you're kind of hoping they might just at the end go, you're so sexy. Let me just finish you off there. And, you know, I'm married, so I would still have to think, is this allowed? No, the man there saying no. Not allowed, sir. You don't think it's allowed?
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. Is that a man at the back, a slightly scary man who is telling me on his own. The man who was shaking his head vigorously is with a very attractive young lady. I don't know if they're together, but he was making it very clear that they mustn't do that. A bit too vehemently, I thought, madam. A bit like, that's what I do. No, never. No, if they touched it, what would you do? Say, excuse me, that is my private area.
Not after last time.
Not after last time. Oh, not funny. So, good try, but I'm sure there was something else major I wanted to talk about, but fuck it. We got some fantastic guests coming on. That was some like amazing thing I wanted to, and it isn't this, but they're doing Baldrick has put together some. You've seen this, Baldrick's in the news. He's put together some announcements on the train at the station where they're doing joke announcements. Have you seen this? I'll see if I can. If I've got it, I don't think I've got it on here, but we'll see. But I've been commuting quite a lot because I live in Harpenden at the moment. I'm working in town a lot, and it's really irritating being on trains. I don't think the guard making a joke written by Baldrick that he is delivering himself will make the situation better for me. I think that will make it worse. There's one way going. Oh, we're going to play a game called Horse. If you see a horse, shout horse, and then every now and again in the journey, the guard will go horse. That would really fuck me off. I was on a train the other day and there was a woman there playing her baby music on her phone with, you know, out loud. That's irritating. And then she gave him a bag of rubbish and he was just banging against the table. And if a man was going, horse! And delivering Baldrick's jokes badly, I would be annoyed about that. But we may talk about that some more. But anyway, look, we've got a fantastic guest for the first half. Maybe guests for the first half. I don't know what's quite going to happen. Hopefully he was just in the toilet, so hopefully he's finished. I was just playing for time. We were just discussing as older men how... he likes to sit down and have a wee now. That's why not have a rest at the same time? I said that sometimes when I sit down and have a wee, now I'm older, it's like a fuel tank, you know, and the fuel can shift to one end of the tank as you're sitting. You stand up and then it shifts again. Do you experience this? And you have to do a little bit more standing up. Do you find that? I'm looking for an older gentleman. They're all quite young in the front. Have you found that? So you're going a bit bald, maybe? Is it affecting you? So I can sit down and have a wee, but then I've got to stand up and finish off the rest of the wee. Sometimes you leave, go, oh, there's a bit more wee in there. This is the kind of stuff we'll be discussing with our first guest. Very, very proud to have this man down here. Will you please welcome the incredible... he was, let me tell you a little bit about him before I introduce him. He was the showbiz dad's most... he was the showbiz dad most fathers identified with in 2004. He's indirectly responsible for me doing these Leicester Square podcasts because I got fed up with having to work at the BBC after something he did that made everything censored, so I decided to do my own shows. Will you please welcome, it's Paul Ross's brother, ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Ross. Hello, Jonathan, thanks for coming along. You can either leave that in the thing or take it out wherever you fancy. Just make sure you speak into it.
All my fault you're here, is it?
It is partly, yeah. I was genuinely kind of, when I did As It Occurs to Me, A.A. Ottomer, I was sort of frustrated that it was so hard to get stuff on the radio. You have to jump through so many hoops. But B, they were, after the Sachs Gate, whatever you want to call it.
There were restrictions.
Well, there was just like, even they were told me, I was doing a panel show, and they said, you're not even allowed to use a swear word in the warm-up before the show is recorded in case there's a journalist in the audience who'll go, you know, they said fuck, now the BBC in trouble. So it kind of, this draconian stuff came down on all of our heads for a while.
So it's all my fault.
It's your fault. Partly your fault for getting a bit overexcited.
It's like an Arab Spring. We'll clear the way and there'll be a rebirth afterwards.
I think it's kind of going back the other way, but I want you to know there are no restrictions on what you can say here today. I would like it if you could say something pretty offensive that will get me in the papers. Hopefully, in 3 years' time, I'll be being sucked off by Katy Perry. That's kind of what I'm aiming for.
You know what? I don't think Katy Perry started sucking off because of Sachs Gate.
I think it was.
Okay, I don't think it was that.
It was because that sent him away to Hollywood. If that hadn't happened, he wouldn't have done Arthur.
Did she? Did you go and see Arthur?
I did. Well, I rented it. I rented it on a DVD. Okay. It's written by my good friend Peter Bainham.
Who's meant to be very good. I didn't see Arthur, so I don't have to comment.
Don't bother.
He's got a great film inside him, I'm sure.
He has. Well, you know, I do. I'm a big fan of Russell. I'm hoping he'll listen and come on next week. So, because he sold out the Hammersmith Lyric.
I was a last minute booking, wasn't I? Yeah. I don't want to. You know, clearly, I mean, I didn't take it personally, but 3 hours notice isn't great. Who pulled out?
No one pulled out. I'd forgotten to get someone for this one. I just thought there was more time than there actually was.
That sums up life at our age, doesn't it? And you said about earlier on, I heard you before, I'm saying about the weeing sitting down. And yeah. I do like to sit down on a wee, because it does seem like a wasted opportunity. But I would like to say, I do poo standing up. I like a challenge.
That's good. Not crouching, just standing up completely
standing
straight.
Standing proud. I stand up in the street even sometimes, you know, in public, standing up. If there's a bar, I can pull myself up. I go for that as well. Really, make the targeting difficult.
That's good.
Swinging from a bar.
I once had to... my most embarrassing poo story, I'm not sure I've told this one before, is when I really need... I was coming back from, like, in town. I got the tube home, and I really suddenly realised I needed the toilet. And I lived about a mile away from the station. So I was very getting close to my house, thinking, God, I really need to go to the toilet. And I couldn't wait. And I was about 100 yards from my house. And it was night time, so it's not so bad. But I had to go and poo against a wall 100 yards from my... And just... And it was a man I've never seen. It was a prodigious poo, I have to say. I went and looked the next morning. I didn't see it at the time. The next morning I went, and you wouldn't believe what I'd left behind there. It was like an alien that landed.
Did you walk past a few times so they didn't know you'd gone back to the scene of crime just to check it out?
I was just thinking, what happened if anyone had seen me, who knew me, and going, why are you shitting against that wall? You live there! What? I just really genuinely...
But society sneers at that kind of behaviour. I don't know why.
So I kind of had to stand against the wall to do that. It was good, it was fun. Worked out well for me. But you are quite fun. I mean, you've written a book about the stupid things you say, or, you know, based on the, you know, what...
Well, yeah, but I mean,
mouth,
I don't actually think I say stupid things. I just think I don't necessarily filter stuff as well as I might occasionally. And my wife does actually call me on this sometimes, because and now it's a kind of playful thing. I will pretend to have said something which is not beyond the realms of possibility. I would have said it, and yet I know it will terrify her. And there'll be moments, and she still falls for it every time. You know, and normally it's about friends of hers or dear acquaintances. And I'll say, I said this. I said, why do you do that stupid... Shall we? You didn't say that, did you? And panics because she thinks I will. But I think obviously I've learned a little bit from recent events. A little bit.
But you got away with it, so it's all right.
No one fucking died. Also, he was meant to be there taking the call. We wouldn't have said it if he was there. And they shouldn't have put it out. It's someone else's fault. That's an easy way of getting through life. Blame other people.
It is sort of someone else's fault.
It wasn't really. I was an idiot. But, you know, you do...
People were gunning for you at the time, maybe.
Probably. But, you know what? It wasn't the end of the world for anyone, including me. So it wasn't, you know... But it was very... really, really weird to live through. I mean, because I was well known. I've been well known for years, but I'd never been at the centre of something like that. And actually, to have 30 to 40 people outside your house every day was so weird and kind of good in a way, kind of exciting, you know? And I deliberately didn't go outside to see how long I could keep them there for. I watched the entire box set of Sex in the City while 40 people waited outside for me.
Wow.
Very odd.
But you've also said things about... you asked the Prime Minister. Was he the Prime Minister at the time?
He wasn't the Prime Minister at the time. How dare you? As if I would ask the Prime Minister such a question. Yeah, I asked him whether he'd ever had a wank thinking about Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
Because... And I think that's a legitimate question.
I do as well.
For a Conservative who was a young boy in that period. And we know a lot of them... I'm sure a lot of the people in the Cabinet had a weird sexual frisson towards Thatcher as well. You know, they're like a stern matronly figure. So I still think that was legitimate and Paxman could learn from me.
What did he say? Did he redeem...
Paxman?
No.
Cameron just blathered and blustered and went... sort of posh noises he made. I got the feeling he did.
Yes.
And I get the feeling he still does.
Have you ever masturbated thinking about Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah,
why not?
10 minutes ago. I wasn't actually in the toilet for reasons you thought. No, I've never masturbated thinking about Margaret Thatcher.
Have you ever masturbated thinking about a female or male comic book character?
Probably. You know what? It'd be much easier just ask me which things I haven't masturbated about, because it'd be a much shorter list.
What haven't you masturbated about?
You, well, yet.
Yeah, not yet, but after this.
But with the way that light is catching your hair, you're a beautiful woman, Miss Herring.
Not too bad.
It's like a Sun Silk advert over here. It really is. There's a bounce and a freshness to your coif.
Well, we both kept our hair. That's the way. As older men, it's a lucky thing.
Yes, we are. We are getting old, because you're, what, 44 now?
44, nearly 45.
Despite the way we both look, I'm older than Richard. But no, it's a weird... I'm enjoying getting old. And I tell you one thing I'm pleased about getting old, because obviously I am beginning to fall apart a little bit. Like, if I take my trousers off now, which could still happen, it does look like I've been sitting in a hot bath for quite a long while. Yeah. All of my skin is permanently dimpled.
Yeah.
Elasticity is a thing of the past. I've tucked one testicle in each of my socks at the moment, just so I don't trip over, okay? So, but I quite like... So the physical side of it, obviously not so much. But I quite like, because obviously you can get away with just being grumpy.
Yeah.
You can get away with people thinking, well, he's old, of course he's grumpy.
I know you should keep in your coat on.
I'll unzip it if you want.
If you like, because you've got a nice bumblebee and a scarf on.
I look like a burglar.
It's got like a sophisticated raffle.
Do you want to take the scarf off as well?
No, no, we can do what you like.
Is this some sort of grooming process?
You won't feel the benefit later, that's all I'm saying.
Can I keep the shoes on?
I'm going to massage you later. Well, if you get massaged, what do you think
about
that?
I'm not a massage fan. I do not like to be massaged. What's the point of someone rubbing you unless they're going to finish you off?
Yeah.
I've got no interest in that at all.
But it's the excitement of, well, will they finish you off?
I got massaged by a blind man once, and admittedly, I only had myself to blame because he was a masseuse, okay? But I went later and he was really doing it. And I think some people, professional masseurs, think that unless they're hurting you, they're not doing their job.
Yeah.
I don't want to be hurt. And I was like, but I felt too embarrassed to say anything, partially because he was blind and I felt bad about it. I don't know why. I felt embarrassed. I thought, I better not tell him. And then also, just I thought, well, he's a professional. I don't want to seem like a coward. But he really fucking hurt me. So much so that I've hated all masseurs ever since.
He'd just come round to tune the piano.
At night.
That's the thing.
It's a great sort of 70s joke you've just done. I feel more at home than I thought.
Now, you are Paul Ross's brother. That's probably what you're best known for.
Proud of it.
And have you seen the Amazon...
Oh, of course.
The framed picture of Paul Ross, because this is what I really want.
I have a confession to make after you've read some of these. Shall I explain what it is if you haven't seen it? On Amazon, if you go to Amazon, which I believe is quite a popular retail website, there is a canvas print you can buy of my brother Paul, looking kind of a bit aimless, a little bit lost, sitting at a really unattractive silver table in some sort of a courtyard outside a studio. Got no idea where this picture was taken. And they've mocked it up into this rather attractive canvas print for sale.
A box canvas print of Paul Ross. You can buy it from the media storehouse. Look it up on Amazon. And if you put Paul Ross into Amazon, it's the first thing that comes up. I don't think he's got much other money. I don't think he gets any of the money from this.
I don't think he gets any cash.
£50 plus £9.99 shipping.
I think you can get it in a variety of sizes.
Oh, can you?
Mm.
Well, I'm looking at probably the biggest one.
No, the bargain one.
The size
one
20.
One's about 125 quid.
Really?
For the real fan, the hardcore fan.
I mean, there's a lot of very funny reviews of it, but what I also like on it is customers who viewed this item also viewed photo mugs of Paul Ross. Aluminium foil is the second. Baratine methylated spirit. German regular Nazi party 1920s 1945.
No, they didn't. You've had it. Oh my god, they did.
There's at least two Nazi-based flags. Original three wolf moon adult T-shirt. Canvas prints of healthy toes. That's obviously, you can understand that because that's a canvas print, right? Those are people.
So this must be people who just don't know how to work the internet.
Photographic prints of women rejecting food. Photo jigsaw puzzle of a portrait of somebody. I don't know. That's not home taxidermy. 99. Well, inflatable woman adult fancy dress costume. So someone who has bought the Paul Ross costume they can dress up.
They've looked at it. They haven't necessarily.
No, they've also viewed. You're right. Okay. You are right.
I have bought the canvas print of my brother.
Have you?
I bought it and gave it to my wife as a Christmas present. We haven't found the right spot to hang it yet, but we do have one.
How many do you think it sells?
I don't think it sells a lot. I think it's just become, it's almost like a meme, and it's become a funny thing to do, and people go there to look at the messages. But Paul is a very cool guy, and he's very relaxed. He knows that he doesn't do what you consider necessarily. He doesn't necessarily make the TV shows that he would want to watch. I mean, it's a job for him. Years ago, he used to have on his answer machine, legitimately, he used to say, if it's about work, the answer's yes. You know, and that's what he had on it, and that shows him in a very good light. Yes.
That's good. So, I was also looking at. So, what about this? Do you remember winning the Showbiz Dad Most Fathers Identified With in 2004? Do you remember winning that?
No.
Was there no ceremony?
I've always thought those things. I've always thought there were no ceremony that I was aware of. If there was, I didn't turn up. I was being with my children, probably. But no, you know, all those things are just nonsense, aren't they? I mean, and it's hideous as well. I mean, a few times I was asked whether, oh, we put you up for Father of the Year, and you think, I'm clearly not fucking Father of the Year. You know, I'm well off. I got help if I need it at home. I'm not Father of the Year.
Yeah.
Father of the Year is some bloke who, you know, doesn't need to be there for his kids and is. John Terry. There you go. Don't rise to it, okay? You go to football matches.
I only know the York City players suck, and I can only do material about them.
But you know, those sort of things are they're normally, I bet you if you were to look a little closer, and I don't know where you found that, it's normally there's some sort of product involved. So it'd be like Wagon Wheels, Father of the Year, most people can associate with, or Vim, or aluminium foil, perhaps. You know, it'd be one of those products.
Yeah, but I never win anything, so I'd
yeah, but you're not even a father yet, are you?
I'm not a father yet.
You're only recently, decided you're straight and getting married. It's a new development in your life.
That's what it is. When John Travolta didn't want me to massage him, I thought I better move on.
Well, I remember speaking to a very, very famous gay friend of mine, who I won't name because he said that after 40, he said that gay men become invisible.
Right.
Not literally, because I got really excited for a while. I thought, wow, you get like a superpower. But I think he meant he found it harder to get, like, you know, the kind of the sexual playground wasn't as open to him as it was previously. So I assume that is what happened
to
you.
It's a similar thing, yeah.
Set up a second best.
It is. But no, so have you got any tips on? I mean, I've been married for about 6 weeks now, so it's going. I've been going okay. It's starting, the honeymoon period is definitely over.
When she brings the first male prostitute home, don't take it personally. That's what I would say. No, I've been married 24 years in August, so we're looking at 25th next year, so it'll be quite a big one. So I will probably have some kind of a party, but no, I've got no tips at all. If you stay married, if you want to stay married, that's all I can say. People who don't want to stay married, they get divorced. And people say, what's the secret? Well, there is no secret. We want to stay together. That's all it is. The minute we stop wanting to stay together, we're going to fucking get out of it as quickly as possible. You know, so there's no kind of, and I don't think people should stay in a marriage just if they don't want to be there. No. So I don't think it's necessarily a great place to be. I'm not anti-divorce at all, but
right,
I'm very pleased.
I'm getting divorced. Yeah. Jonathan Ross has taught me into it.
No, I'm thrilled I'm still married. It's made my life, made some sense of my life. And also she once said, actually, she said to me, you know, I'm your human credentials. It was a terrible moment of awareness.
Good. I was going to add something off the back of that. This is what happens on when Jonathan is doing his show. I bet this happens a lot when he goes.
Never happened.
I was going to say something.
It's never happened once.
But they edit it out. But
I actually sometimes pretend things have happened. Once, many, many years ago, when I used to do more live TV, and I was doing The Last Resort, that first series I did for Channel 4, and we had Barbara Windsor on. And this was back before she was on the Queen Vic. So she was on basically because I loved the Carry On films growing up. But I ran out of things to ask. It was a live show. So I pretended my contact lens had dropped out on the floor to give me some excuse. But then she started helping me look for it. I felt really bad because I thought, well, it can't be good for a woman of her age with her knees and stuff to be on the floor. Help me find it. And I still had it in. So then I had to actually pop it out. And I thought, people can see that I'm popping out the lens. It was just, it was a web of lies.
So don't lie, be honest about it. My TV career began before yours did. That seems unbelievable.
No, that can't.
Is this true? According to Wikipedia, so it may not be true, you appeared in an episode of Ain't Half Hot Mum in 1981.
Yes.
So what did you, you play?
I know, I did. I was actually in some commercials when I was a kid as well. So I did stuff because my mum, even though we were very much a working class family, I think she saw she was always looking for kind of opportunities for us, and she wanted us to have a kind of a richer life, perhaps. And I think she thought might have been prescribed for us because of our backgrounds and where we were. But that stuff came about because somehow, I can't remember, you had to have an equity card to be on TV. And somehow, someone in the family, I think my dad, got hold of a bent equity card, right, under the name of John Thurston. And so we all used it. So, anyway, so everyone in the house who was male, who could get away being John Thurston, would accept work if it came from this slightly dodgy TV agency who supplied extras as John Thurston. Right. So there's an awful lot of John Thurston in shows there, and it's always different. He's a marvellous actor, John Thurston. He could play from 14 to 50 with no trouble. And in that, I think that was D-Mob Day in Ain't Half Hot Mum. And you can see me on screen, and there's a queue of people waiting in the line behind Windsor Davis, I believe, who's being D-Mob. So his wonderful dream of when he was the sergeant, he loved it so much. And I'm saying, and I was always so convinced, I almost always stared straight in the camera. I was so at ease, partly because I was so excited to be there. So I'd be there, and I'd be the kid, and I'd be going, trying not to smile like an idiot. I'm also in the movie Breaking Glass. Do you remember that film with Hazel O'Connor?
Yeah.
And I'm the only one person, once again, this is a crowd scene, and there are about 1,000 people there, and you can actually see it. If you see it on the big screen, you can see there's one person staring right at the camera, and it's me. And I'm looking up there thinking, do I look a bit like James Dean? And the answer's no.
But you're a researcher on the TV show Loose Talk. which I was a guest on, at least. I was in that.
Don't were you in the first me? Series or second series?
I don't know. I didn't realise there were two series.
You weren't there in my tenure.
Really?
You never have got past. I was a researcher on there, yeah. And there was a kind of short-lived Channel 4. It was the first Channel 4 talk show. It was the live show. And the host was a nice guy, smart guy. He was a journalist who worked for The Face.
Maybe a different show. There might be two shows called Loose Talk.
I think so. I think you. I don't think you were. This was like 82, 83.
I was in school then.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe we had a schoolboy section that I didn't know about.
I thought that was a bit much.
You weren't. Well, what was the loose
I do my own research. I can't blame anyone. Sack the researcher.
It should never have gone out.
I saw that. I was right. So did you make much money from the Rice Krispies advert?
I got a mustard polo neck nylon jumper out of it.
Wow.
My
still
parents
wearing
kept
it now.
Them. I'm still wearing it now. This is real fibres. But I remember it was quite... And I was excited. Doing it was just such an exciting thing to be doing that kind of stuff anyway, and seeing how they did adverts. I didn't mind at all. But my parents had the money, but you know, my dad worked, he was a porter at a hospital, my mum was raising six kids, so I guess the money went into the family pot. Although he did have a Ferrari. Not an easy thing for me to say, even. I don't remember seeing any of the money for it, but I don't think we expected to see any either. But we did quite a few commercials. We did a commercial as a whole family. When a commercial, we were like a family commercial for Win-A-Lot. We weren't eating them. We were chasing out off his dog. But the dog got much better treated than we did on the day. And we found out afterwards the dog had just had its hip replaced. So, fuck me, it must be hard to find some Bernards. Because this one, they played a fortune to get his hip replaced and then given this one with a bad hip. So we, you can't work him too long. His hip hasn't taken yet. Get another dog!
Amazing, hip replacement on a dog. I thought of something.
I was a last-minute call, kind of. He's got nothing he wants to ask me.
And there was loads of things.
We talk about anything. We don't talk about me.
When you started up in your chat, in your talk show, was that immediately you kind of came out of nowhere, sort of thing, as a talk show host. But the press were kind of gunning you for you even then, because they were sort of going, you were compared to Simon D before you'd even really been...
I didn't feel like they were gunning for me, to be honest with you. Not compared to what happened then. I felt like they were gunning for me. But no, yeah, I suppose some of them did say that. But I suppose it was quite irritating to, you know, I mean, when you're on TV, you do irritate people, even if you are, as we are, essentially saintly human beings. But, you know, and you've got to accept that that's what's going to happen.
D was the 60s... talk show host who was massive and then disappeared.
I believe it was due to a kind of mixture of arrogance and hubris and all that kind of thing. But I met him once very briefly, but I don't know. But he kind of was huge. But he was bigger than I ever was, really, I think. I mean, he had this big Saturday night show. And this is back when there were essentially two channels. It was BBC One, ITV. No one watched two, and there was no entertainment on two. And this was a big Saturday night show. So he was huge. And then almost overnight, he sort of disappeared.
But it's odd that they started comparing you to him while you were still on TV. It wasn't like you're on TV and it disappeared. Go, he's a bit like Simon D. It's like they're going, he's going to be like Simon D.
But it was odd. But you know what? I can kind of see why they were doing it in a way, because back then in particular, I think I learned how to do what I do on TV. But back then when I started, some weeks it was a really good show. Other weeks it was a really bad show. I remember, I'm going to drop a name now, but one of the rogues from Aha said... not Morton Hackett, one of the other ones. I remember seeing him in something like Smash Hits or Just 17. Those magazines were around at the time saying, what's your favourite show on TV? And he said, The Last Resort on a good night. He said, what's your least favourite show on TV? And he said, The Last Resort on a bad night. And I thought, he's got a point, you know, because some nights I was just like a kind of, you know...
But it was every night, was it?
No, it was once a week.
Once a week, okay.
Yeah, but it was live after about 3 weeks in, so it was kind of terrifying, especially since I hadn't actually done any real performance in front of an audience. I did a few... When they said, okay, we'll give this show a go, we'll do a pilot and we'll let you try and host it, I did a couple of small open mic spots at the Comedy Store when it was, I think it was here in Leicester Square then. Yeah, and they went kind of okay. It was a cobble together some jokes. A friend I knew was doing some stand-up comedy, he let me have a couple of jokes. I wrote one myself, which I can remember if you want it.
Go on,
and there was one or two I nicked from various comedy books. The one I did myself was, it was convoluted. I was saying about how I was a bit of a lonely child and I had... an imaginary friend. I was an unpopular child, I had an imaginary friend, but I didn't spend a lot of time with him because he was off playing with more interesting children. That was the kind of...
Did he ever get a laugh as big as that?
It got polite laughter, thank you. But it got slightly more laughter because I think there was a degree of sympathy and empathy because I was so terrified on stage. So, but I was aware, based on the material that I managed to generate myself, that a stand-up comedy wasn't my future.
Although you're very funny in the sports, they think it's all over quiz. You always seem to go off on, and it seemed to be not something that could have been given to you as a script.
Some of it was scripted. I like to have some idea. ideas written down for me before I start. But yeah. No, I can extemporise if necessary.
Yeah, but I thought that was very impressive. Yeah, so but as somebody who hadn't done stand-up to a large degree, I thought it was...
Yeah, well, but you know why? I think a lot of it is, and you know, if it's confidence.
Yeah.
A lot of it's confidence, and I do have a disproportionate amount of confidence.
And the edit as well, which you don't have the benefit of on this show.
But the confidence to talent ratio is way out of whack with me. You know, I remember once I did something at Amnesty, with some big Amnesty benefit, and I was going out, and there was front of about 4,000 people, and Stephen Merchant said, "Aren't you nervous?" I went, "No." And I went out and died on my arse, and he came out and said, "You just died." I went, "Yeah." No one died.
It is all about confidence. Well, that was what I was going to ask you about, was the very thing you were saying when you said Ferrari, or tried to.
The Roy Hodgson connection.
Yeah, the Roy Hodgson, because this has become now...
It's become topical.
With people going... And in fact, David Jason today was calling it political correctness gone mad, or political correctness was destroying comedy. Because
the very fibre of British society.
Because I think The Bodyguard, or whatever it was called, might have destroyed comedy.
I saw about 10 minutes that once. It was truly mind-numbingly awful.
It was like your granddad had been put in and been forced to appear on a Generation Game sitcom and was slightly out of his depth. But... people have sort of, you know, with Roy Hodgson. Words with R.
Hodgson isn't the hard one. Hodgson's the one they get right.
I can't say the word Hodgson. people are saying that to take the mickey out of that now, which obviously you've made a career out of.
Well, hold on. I haven't made a career out of it. I didn't say it. You know what? I can't say the letter R. Give us a gig. Whoa. Outside of agents, office going round and round the wagging walks. Listen to that, it's funny.
Better than the imaginary friend joke. Funny, so, yes.
I was 7 at the time.
Is it ridiculous that people are getting upset about the Release Roderick joke?
I think people got police. That's an interesting thing. Yeah. I think people got upset about it because I think what they saw it was just a kind of an immediate attack on him. And he's doing a job which a lot of people really... I mean, I'm not particularly interested in football, so it doesn't really matter to me much. But, I mean, people want to see England win a big football match, it appears, and therefore they think he might have a chance. And if he's being attacked from day one, then that might lessen the chance, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, because I can't imagine the footballers going to go, "We're not going to listen to you because the Sun called you a cunt." because they do everyone eventually. So I don't think it's necessarily a problem. I wouldn't feel so... And I would have thought, you know, he's a man, he seems to be a very intelligent man, a smart man, a kind of
successful
man.
He could speak English, which only the last one could do. I thought that would be more of a...
So why would he be bothered? I don't think he'd be bothered, really. I can't
see... people are sort of treating it like it's a speech impediment or a disability. I mean, I suppose it is a lot of people have said
that's going to encourage bullying, and I don't know if it is going to encourage bullying. I don't think bullies need that much encouragement. The sort of people who are going to bully are going to bully anyway, and they're looking for vindication elsewhere and saying, "It's okay, we can carry on with the bullying, it's in the Sun." You know, they're not looking outside for... They're people who are not being perhaps properly educated themselves, and therefore think it's okay to take their spite and venom out on others who are less fortunate and can't pronounce certain key letters in the alphabet. If only it could have been a Z, that'd have been so much easier for my life. But I don't really see it's a big deal. I think there's a lot more things we should get. You know, don't do that. Bully.
And just showing off. And you're an OBE? I didn't realise you were an OBE until I looked you up on Wikipedia. That can't be the thing that's not true on Wikipedia.
I don't know. I've never wikied myself.
Haven't you? I edit my own one, I do. The stuff on there I don't like, I take it out.
We started editing a friend of ours, because a friend of ours is a brilliant writer, and we're really, very fond of a guy called Neil Gaiman. I don't know if you know Neil Gaiman, the writer. He's quite a good friend of mine. And for a joke, we were, the family were allowed, and we obviously ran out of things to talk about. And I said, "Let's put some stuff on Neil's Wikipedia page." So we're big fans of the six series of movies called Leprechaun, starring Warwick Davis. The low-budget Leprechaun series. I can particularly recommend Leprechaun 5, In the Hood. Okay? Where he goes to Harlem. Leprechaun in the Hood is my favourite. Leprechaun in Space is great as well. But by then the budget had almost gone into like the negative side of the balance. And so we decided that we would attribute all of the Leprechaun movies to Neil Gaiman. So we put it on his Wikipedia page and said Neil is particularly proud of his work on the Leprechaun movies. And then we couldn't leave it alone. We kept going back and embellishing how much he had adored it. And he'd been to certain film festivals where he would refuse to talk about anything apart from the Leprechaun movies. And he wanted to be remembered. And then finally we got an actual email from Wikipedia saying, "We know what you're doing, stop it." You were banned, almost banned from using Wikipedia from that address.
It is fun messing around Wikipedia, and I do encourage people to do it, but they've actually locked my my page because people mess around with it too much. We picked on Barabbas, I'm not doing that because you can't say it.
I think you are doing it.
Barabbas, the biblical figure, who was released instead of Jesus. We mentioned him on one of our other podcasts, some guy I used to do podcasts with. I think we said he was... You've been arrested for bumming, I think that was it. So, but if you've picked someone like Barabbas, no one's really checking up on Barabbas' Wikipedia page to make sure it hasn't been
vandalized. Also, they can't ask Barabbas, can they? So it's like, who knows? Maybe he was once arrested for bumming.
He was.
Kept it quiet.
That's why they let him go. Jesus simply hadn't bummed enough. Now, you said to Gwyneth Paltrow, is that her name, Gwyneth Paltrow?
It is her name, yes.
That you would like to fuck her.
Well, I didn't mean it, and I don't mean to sound discourteous or indeed unchivalrous by saying that, but yeah. I was fooling around on the show,
yeah.
And I'd probably done what you did and run out of things to say and thought that would be quite a funny thing to say, I think it was quite a funny thing to say, and she didn't seem to mind.
She didn't mind it.
Well, she didn't say I could.
No.
So it wasn't seen as any kind of, like, you know, legitimate sort of... there wasn't an engagement there. She didn't indulge me in any way. But no, I was... doing kind of faux... Yeah. Flirting is the wrong word for saying you want to fuck someone. But I think it was in my head. And, you know, I'm sure she'd be lovely to fuck. I mean, I'm sure it'd be a lovely experience.
I wouldn't fuck her.
I wouldn't fuck
her because she was in Sliding Doors. And it's I wouldn't be able to
You are so choosy. Even so do you go through everyone's Wikipedia before you fuck them and make sure...
I wouldn't be able to stop thinking of Sliding Doors and the fact it doesn't make logical sense and every film is essentially Sliding Doors. But so, they don't bother showing you the alternative. I'm not an idiot. I know that a decision has an impact. It can go in a different way. I don't need to see both repercussions of it. And why does she have sex with the bloke who quotes Monty Python sketches? That never happened. So because of that, I can assure you, no man who's ever quoted...
I think we've got to the core of your problem here. It's not the logical kind of conundrum at the middle of it. It's the fact that as a young man who used to quote Monty Python...
I did, to
you
girls.
You got no action.
And Gwyneth Paltrow was not interested in
She
me.
Turned you down and she used that as the reason.
She did, but then...
You are not fuckworthy because of your quoting of the Lumberjack song.
It is.
Repeatedly, doing foreplay.
But anyway, tell us about the... Are you an OBE? You're an OBE.
I am. I
How
do
did
have
you
the
get
order
an OBE?
Of the, I know, I don't know either.
How
I think
come they
it
didn't
was
take it away from you when
Because it wasn't that
Andrew
big
Sachs.
A fucking deal. I don't know, but here's the great thing about having the OBE. When I meet Prince Charles, which I do occasionally, not socially, I hasten to add, although I think he seems like quite a decent bloke, but I'll do some sort of a charity event and he'll be there. And the first time I met Prince Charles was in the 80s when he was with Di.
Yeah.
Okay, and I met Di several times. I even had lunch with Di once. Once again, not one-on-one. This was a charity thing. And I don't just do charity things to meet Princess Diana Charles occasionally. I'll do it also to meet Simon Cowell, for example. So the first time I met him, he obviously had no idea who I was, which is absolutely fine. And I'll tell you how long ago this was. On the bill with me on the show, there were a band called Ven Jericho.
Okay? Oh, yes.
So I think this specifically ages it. And I'm standing in the lineup beforehand to meet the royal personages with Ven Jericho, and he goes on and he says a few words to them and a few words. I mean, it must be quite hard. No, what do you say to people? You've got no idea who they are. You couldn't care less, but you're being polite. And he came to me and he went, oh, hello, hello. And I went, hello, Your Highness. He went, what will you be singing for us tonight? Because he thought I was in the band. I said, whatever you like. And so years later, I met him and he gave me the OBE. It was very nice. And now I'd have a meeting. He always says the same thing. I met him like three times. He always says, oh, you're not wearing the OBE. You know you can tonight, don't you? Because you're only meant to wear them under certain circumstances.
That's right.
Yeah, like when you're meeting royal personages. It's just a bit fucking pointless, really, because there's not a lot of opportunities. I did go through a period when Big Brother, remember when Big Brother first came, we loved it. I always wore my OBE when I was watching Big Brother. It became a ritual. And it almost got to the stage where I actually felt kind of like almost guilty if I wasn't wearing it when Big Brother was up. Like I was letting the people in the Big Brother house down.
How big a thing is an OBE?
I've got two. You get a
Have
big
you?
One and you get a small one. You get the big one is kind of pinning on like an old medal, right? Like this. Yeah. And the other one is a little tiny button one that you can put on a smaller jacket to be a bit more discreet. But I don't really know where they are. They're in a drawer somewhere. It wasn't a big thing for me.
What was the reason they gave you an OBE? I'm not saying
hang
you deserve.
I don't like the way this questioning has gone. You can't just. Well, who cares what you think about who gets an IBE? Who died and made you the sorting hat? All right. That's what happened. My name got called out by Leslie Phillips at school. And instead of going to Gryffindor, they put me in the OBE class.
I just can't imagine the Queen kind of going, we must give
I don't mean the Queen one. I wasn't there the day the Queen gives them out. I think there's a pecking order even giving out the OBE. I was the Prince Charles day. But I don't want to diminish, because a lot of people get OBEs for very good reasons. You know, they really give self.
Yeah, you have to diminish it by getting by having one.
No. Oh, you're saying if they offered you one, you'd do it and you turn it to one of your shoddy little 30-minute tours, like, oh, I grew a Hitler moustache and I got an OBE. That's what you do with it. At least I didn't cash in it like that. I'd keep mine in a drawer and wear it for Big Brother. I use
cashing
it for important things.
Cashing in on my Hitler moustache. Yes. I've got a Hitler moustache. I know, I cash in on this.
Yeah. You did. You cashed in on Hitler.
I've got an iron cross for that.
You exploited that poor man's memory.
What did you get it for?
I got it for broadcasting.
Wow.
I got it for broadcasting. No, but I think enough. I got it for surviving. No, it was I was popular back then. I don't know why I got it, but I accepted it because it seemed like such a bizarre and unexpected thing.
Just the reason I'm surprised is that you don't strike me as such as an establishment broadcaster.
Yeah,
that's
that's very kind of you to put some sort of a finish on that. But but trust me, Richard, I was equally surprised.
And you played God Save the Queen on the radio when you got it.
But I love that record. Do you love that record? I remember when the...
I don't think the Queen likes it so much, though. I don't think
she's even heard it, has she? She couldn't care less. What? She didn't care about the Sex Pistols. She was off driving a Jeep hunting stags or something all through the 70s. She couldn't care less about the Sex Pistols, but I love the Sex Pistols and I still do. And I remember when there was that Jubilee, you know, she had the last one, which was 77.
Yes.
So of course that's when punk was at its powerful best, and I had to DJ. We had a street party and I offered to DJ, and I played that like 7 or 8 times before they came up and took it away from me. One of the grown ups came and took it away.
I must have been 10 years old then.
Yeah, you look
old. I can remember the street party. So all these kids won't remember that there was, you had big trestle tables and cakes with Union Jacks on the top of them. Yeah. Wouldn't do that now, would they?
Well, they might do.
I don't think they
did
will.
Did you not like the Royal Wedding? I enjoyed the Royal Wedding.
Which one? The recent one?
Well, the only one. Which one? Everyone cares about the fucking
Prince
other one.
Prince Charles got married. Princess Anne got married to Mark
Prince
Phillips.
Did Prince Charles get married? I thought they were still living in sin.
To Lady Di. There's lots, you know, George
That's Pitt a long
got,
time ago.
George
talk about
Pitt
the new
got
one.
Married to Mary or someone. Probably.
Hey, Grandpa, get with it.
I wasn't really bothered. I was on tour at the time. And I was staying in a hotel somewhere, and it was on.
I went out
for a run.
I quite liked it because my kids liked it, you know, or my daughter liked it, and her friends, and they found it quite sweet and quite exciting. I thought it was quite nice seeing everyone kind of go out and have a nice day out. Mm. And it was in the 70s when it happened, I just thought, oh, this is bullshit, you know, and I really didn't want to get involved. But now that's where you get old, you think, oh, it's quite nice. Everyone gets a day off, it's quite fun. And they drive off in a Jaguar, and he looks quite nice.
But you must have been properly the right age when, because I went to punk in 1983.
Oh, no, it was the best thing. I can't believe it. I was 16 when punk happened.
Yeah.
And then immediately I kind of jumped on board and just had, but I was only a punk with about 9 months because then it was sort of over.
Right.
It really only lasted a chunk up, but it was so good.
Did you live in Camden? When?
No. I was born in Camden, but I lived in East London all my life. My parents lived in East London, and I moved out from there. So I used to get the tube up to go and see gigs and stuff. And it was quite scary. You did used to get chased by people. I remember, for no real reason, I once had a butcher's jacket which I'd splashed with red paint and put dolls' faces on, and I'd have burnt their eyes out with a cigarette. And I'd written Psycho Killer on the back, and some men chased me. It wasn't safe.
You can't do that.
They chased me.
It was a better time. When
they jumped out of a van and chased me, and I was going, it's art, it's art. It's like Art Walk, like Genesis, but better. Leave me alone.
You don't get that anymore, just hard men stopping.
No, but you know what? But people, you couldn't wear what. Now you can kind of go out and wear what you want, and you couldn't back then. It was really weird. Like, if a man went out and his T-shirt wasn't tucked in, there was something wrong. People would look at him funny. You know, it's like, what are you doing? The fuck are you doing? Tuck that in. And now it's like, people go, you can go out wearing a sheet, and people go, oh, nice. You know?
You go out with a Hitler moustache, and no one bats an eyelid. I can tell you right
no.
there.
Richard, they do.
They really do. So, look, I want to bring on our other guest, just have a little 5 minutes of the two of you together.
Please do.
Because you have. I think you'll get on very well with her. She's got some things she wants to say to you. Are we back there? Are we ready to go? We need another microphone and everything as well. Will you please welcome my other guest tonight, the fantastic Francesca Martinez? There you go. Hello, Frankie.
Hello.
Come in from Dublin, especially.
Indeed.
you were an even later booking than Jonathan Ross. There's your microphone.
You really hadn't planned this show, had you? You hadn't booked either of us, sir.
I thought I'd just wing it and see what happened. It's worked out well.
I was a little bit nervous meeting Jonathan because he's got a speech impediment. I don't know. Do you mention it?
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought I'd be direct, get it out there and say, well done.
I've overcome adversity.
You're so brave, isn't it? Well done, Rich, for having him on.
No, it was nice of you.
I love the fact that you weren't bothered about his voice or clarity or anything.
I was thinking of doing a kind of Ricky Gervais character of a man who can't say his arse. So, you know, I thought it'd be useful research for me to have him
Ricky's,
on.
Ricky's character with his hilarious catchphrase, where's me BAFTA?
I've always wondered twice if, were you annoyed that your surname was Ross?
Well, you know, weirdly, I didn't. You know, they talk about, you know, the bullying. A few kids at school made jokes, but I don't really remember that. It's a long time ago. But it was only when I appeared on TV that I became aware. Because it was only when the paper started writing about it that it actually became an issue. Weirdly, so maybe
you didn't even know.
I hadn't really noticed. It speaks well of East London that people haven't made a big deal about it.
I've always thought the word speech impediment was very poorly picked. Because it's fucking hard to say. So I thought it should be a bit easier, you know. So I was like, I have a... And who the fuck put the letter S in Lisp?
Well, you know, what I have apparently, what I have, the inability to say art, I believe, and of course Stephen Fry has told me this because he knows it, is called eroticism,
yes,
which begins with a fucking art. Yeah. So why they would do that is, you're right, there's some sort of evil scheme at play here.
It's really, names of disabilities, like my disability is cerebral palsy. That's fucking hard. No, but I've recruited myself properly. Because I love Wobbly. This is called my friend, he's Wobbly too, yeah. This is true. He calls himself neurologically inconsistent. But that has got the hard to say too.
Well, it's good to get the both of you on so you can share your experiences.
Yeah, we can bond.
We've triumphed.
Are you finding those disability benefits? Cuts hard.
I'm finding it fucking annoying they never gave me a special parking permit, I tell you that. I still got to use the mother and children bay at Safeways.
I love... Do you know, I've got about free parking. I should say this, my mum a few years ago, because I heard that a lot of parents of disabled kids experience a real sense of loss when they find out their kid is disabled. So I wondered if she felt this right. So a few years ago, I said to her, Mum, did you ever feel disappointed, you know, when you found out I was Wobbly? And she says, no, I'm just so excited about the free parking. Every cloud. My mum is so cool.
Well, I've raised a lot of money for Scope over the last 7 or 8 years. And
well
all
done.
All
what asked... do you want, a fucking medal?
I know.
I say to Rich, look, Rich, cut out the middleman and give the money to me. Just write me a cheque, I'm still waiting.
I think I should at least get a thing where I'm allowed to use the toilets. Well, should let a little thing. If someone goes, that's disabled toilet, I just flash and go, yeah, it's all right.
Like you don't use them already.
I use them, but I want to be allowed to use them. Like,
would
it takes
you,
away the frisson
would
of excitement
you consider
of being
running
caught.
A marathon for Jonathan?
Maybe, yeah. Well, if we'll give him, if it can pay for some kind of machine that he can put in his mouth, they'll allow him to vaguely replicate.
Hold on, hold on. I haven't left yet. I just want you to be. I'm actually white. I still sit right here.
Richard, don't talk about them. They're not here.
Okay, so.
Does he take sugar? Yes, I do.
Oh dear. Well, it's lovely to have you both along. We're going to talk to Francesca Moore in the second half without. Jonathan Ian, we can say what we really think he's going to go. So we can say what we really think about him. But we're going to have a break. This is the end of the first podcast. If you're listening at home, we're going to put the second one with Francesca later on. We'll mention this now, which we have mentioned. We are doing you're doing the Scope benefit on.
Yeah.
So you're doing
Scope
it.
Scope Benelton is Scope.
So maybe you'll get some of the money from the Scope benefit.
Yeah,
you can
I'm
ask
trying.
For a cut of the door.
I'm hoping.
On Sunday the 20th of May. So
at
this Sunday.
The Apollo.
The House of Apollo. It's only a little gig. We should be all right.
Yeah.
So do come along and buy tickets to that if you can. Al Murray, Ben Elton. He doesn't know what he's collecting money for.
Some charity.
Some charity. But for the moment, will you please give it up for my first guest, the amazing Jonathan Ross. Thank you. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast was performed by Richard Herring with guests Jonathan Ross and Francesca Martinez. It was produced by Ben Walker and Dave Cribb. Music by Pess. It's a Fuzz and Sky Potato production. You can see Francesca Martinez on tour from May. Go to francescamartinez.com and at the Tricycle Theatre on June the 6th, where Richard Herring will be one of the guests. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Thank you. Bye. How do you like them Sky Potatoes? Hello, thanks for downloading Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, Rehearlustaper. I have to read it out or I can't do it. If you've enjoyed it, that's fantastic. It is free. I'm trying to keep all this stuff free to download if I possibly can. It'd be lovely in order that I can carry on eating and providing for my wife who likes expensive things. If you were interested in coming to see some of my live shows or buying some of my stuff, so I'll just quickly take you through what's coming up. I'm at the Bloomsbury Theatre on Tuesday and Wednesday this week, doing the last two performances of What Is Love Anyway? That's in London. There are still some tickets available. My new show, Talking Cock, is going to be at Edinburgh and touring around the country. If you go to edfringe.com, you can buy tickets for that and for Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast. You can book ahead for those. If you're interested in Talking Cock, you can also buy the book. Now, we've just republished it at www.gofasterstripe.com. Might be co.uk. Play around a little bit. I can't remember. This is a terrible advert. If you want to take part in the Talking Cock survey, go to richardherring.com. And you can click on the links to that. If you want to donate to Scope and get your name in the Talking Cock programme in Edinburgh, go to www.justgiving.com/talkingcock. If you can't afford to do any of those things, you can give to charity, you can give to me. It would be just terrific if you just told your friends about this podcast, spread the word through social media or email or just by talking to them. And then hopefully they might buy something down the line if you can't afford to. But please keep on enjoying it for nothing if you don't like the idea of paying me. Sorry to put this advert at the end.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.